Hello and welcome to the Men's Lifeline Academy. I'm your host, Zach Goodman, and today I have Christopher Lynn with us. Chris is a guy who's out there helping other men, busy dads out there with developing systems, simple systems for them. And so we're going to learn all about his journey, where he came from, the trials he's overcome. And this is our first meeting. So Chris, welcome to the podcast, man.
All right. Appreciate it, Zach. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for your flexibility and coming on in the early a.m.
Yeah, I'm usually an early riser, so this is a pretty good time for me.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself in about a minute or two, and then we can discuss like a trial that you faced, overcame, and now how you're helping other busy dads, you know, reclaim their lives, get their dead heart beating, and living to their full potential as best as possible, of course.
Sure, absolutely. So, Christopher Lynn, I live in Southwest Missouri area. And full-time, I'm a program manager for a fintech. But what I'm doing now, or trying to spin up and help with, is to help busy dads with systems. Over my entire career, I have used systems partially to survive. I started out working as an academic advisor at a university, and I had over 500 students that I worked with. So trying to understand what was going on in their career, what they were intending to do, what classes they wanted to take, what their aspirations were. I really had to pay attention to detail and make sure that I had good notes. As a program manager today, I've got lots of different efforts that I have my hands into. I've got two daughters, so chasing them around. One just hit her teenage years, so we're starting to step up the activities. So again, systems, calendar, having everything managed is super important. Also do quite a bit of volunteering, so managing volunteer boards and those activities that plays into it. So if I didn't have systems, if I didn't have things in place to make sure I had my calendar managed, make sure I had my task list managed, I wouldn't survive. It just wouldn't happen. You asked about a time, a trial, et cetera. So I didn't always have things really together. And honestly, you know, I'm a work in progress, just like we all are, right?
Right, of course.
But particularly one trial that I faced was having the opportunity to either grow a career in academia or choosing my family.
Oh,
so
really?
I really brief story, right? I had met my wife overseas. I had a couple good friends of mine that were there. I went to visit them. She shows up to a party, and really it was just from there. It was love at first sight, at least for me. I think she came along a little bit after, but I definitely was into her. But I met her. We kept up. I thought, okay, I'm going to keep, you know, moving and grinding and working with all the students. At that time, I had been working with a graduate program, so I was doing marketing and recruitment and advisement and just really going full bore. Zach, I was in the office from 6 a.m. to about 8 p.m. every night. You know, ate fast food at my desk. You know, if I had lunch, I made a post about this on Substack, but I had a time that season where my calendar was so full that I would have to schedule time to go to the bathroom. And I would have students try to find me in the bathroom. I had a female student that walked with me all the way to the precipice of the bathroom just to get some of my time. And of course, I had to say, no, make an appointment. We'll come back. So it was a season of my life where I had enjoyed dating and getting to know my wife and really connecting with her. But also, I just really was off the rails. I was spending way too much time unfocused, just trying to grind it out, which as I know a lot of men do. You know, that's our tendency, right? We want to solve the problem. We just want to grind and grind and grind until we got no more. Thankfully, she saw past that and she married me anyway. But at that point, I had a choice, not only to see what the schedule was like, because I know, you know, just married, working this much and being obsessed with this passion was not going to work well with being a young married. But also, unfortunately, my father-in-law died right in the middle of, right after we had gotten married, within a few weeks of when we got married.
Oh, really?
He was he was not well for a while. He was sick for a while. Thankfully, you know, we were able to do a wedding ceremony in his nursing care room. And in fact, we call that our real ceremony. Well, legally, it is our real ceremony based on some laws in Ohio where she's from. That is our legitimate ceremony. And then our show wedding is what I call it at night. You know, we had a great time, but still, even during all that season, I'm still balancing, okay, what's going on back at the office? What am I going to do, you know, to drive this thing forward? But going back to when my father-in-law passed away, I put my wife on a plane and say, hey, you know, make sure you're there for his last hours. I'm still grinding away, right? Even on Saturday, trying to get some stuff done, figure out what logistically I'm going to do. And then when he did pass, I went out there, still tried to work remote. We were getting a semester started, so trying to get student registration done and get some of those activities done. And Thursday of the week that I took off, I get a call from my supervisor saying, hey, when are you going to be back? I said, well, I'm technically on a week of bereavement leave. I'll be back on Tuesday. We'd had a holiday. We'd had a holiday, and then it was going to go Tuesday to Tuesday. I said, all right, I'll be on Tuesday. And said, well, our dean has said, if you're not back on Monday, there will be consequences. So really, Zach, that was the moment for me.
How do I choose part of the policy, you know, like HR policy, if you're taking, that's all.
Yeah, no, I actually had called HR during that time. And they said, yeah, you're with it well within your rights. You started on a Tuesday technically with a holiday on Monday. So you should be able to get 5 full business days and return on Tuesday. It's just a bizarre scenario, right? And I'm in the midst of juggling, okay, I'm doing well at my job. And not to brag, but I'd actually won a national advising award in the midst of all that craziness. So I was being rewarded for fueling things into the train. That wasn't necessarily going down the right tracks, but I was being rewarded for it and chasing it. Right.
Right.
So I have all this crashing down on, or it felt like everything was crashing down on me. Right. Say, okay, I've got to figure out what does this career look like? I'm faced against continuing to fuel what I've been into versus, you know, becoming a family man, starting to start a family, really paying attention to my bride, which I really wanted to do as well. And I thought, I have energy for all of this and I can handle all of it. So that Thursday I had to make a choice. And thankfully, by the grace of God, when I took that call and my supervisor had said, hey, if you don't come back on Monday, there will be consequences. He said, I'm not sure what those consequences will be, but if you're asking me to choose between my family and my job, I'm going to choose my family every single time. And Zach, that set into motion a lot of things that really proved out what consequences there could be. In the scope of coming back, I was called into a meeting to explain my actions.
Right.
As they were. I had a position that we were doing some organizational planning to make into 2 positions. And those positions were posted. I interviewed for both of them. I wasn't hired for either of them. And I started back at square one. Thankfully, my first boss at the university was the position I went back to. And she was very gracious and very understanding. She said, hey, I want you to do the best you can here. I respect you. You know, you had taken a promotion and taken an opportunity, but we don't see you as any different or changed. You know, you held this position before, and I trust that you can do it well. And she'd also said, if this is the change for you, then it is. So Zach, I took the opportunity at that point and said, I'm back in a job that I know. I'm back at a pace and a management schedule that I know. I'm newly married. Not too long after that, believe it or not, we didn't have quite a honeymoon baby. But right about the time of my father's funeral, we found out that my wife was pregnant. Not too long after we'd gotten married, we were pregnant with our now teenage daughter. So again, just lots of exciting, but I will tell you, and you asked about what you learn and kind of where you felt at your lowest. I felt defeated, right? I had all these students that I knew. My wife and I, we have a ministry to international students, and the program I was working with had a lot of international students. So I was kind of the man with the internationals, right? They knew who I was, and to have to explain the shift and the change and the things that were going on, that was really challenging. But I took that opportunity. I was excited because I could set some hard edges around my day, right? I knew the job. I knew what it took. I knew what it took to be successful. I could leave at 5 without anyone asking. It just, I could leave on time. I could set those hard edges around my day. And so that's what I did. I made some, you know, I refined my systems. I looked at what I could automate, what I could do that would still meet the requirements for the department, but make sure that I did have time to have spontaneous lunches with my wife, to make sure that I could leave again at a reasonable time, et cetera. So I had a season where I was doing that and still looking for opportunities. And then after a few months, I was able to land an opportunity at my current employer. But really what I learned in that season, you know, I went through a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety. What's next? You know, this was my identity. I was going to be a professor. I was going to be in the academy. And now where I see God leading me is I've got some opportunities to talk with people, to mentor them, to shape them, particularly dads. As a dad, it's so hard whenever your career is threatened or your identity is threatened. And so I see this as an opportunity to say, hey, if you're in that position, if you're in that stage of life where you're trying to figure things out, you can reinvent yourself. There are opportunities to do new things and change. So one of the things that I have also posted as a story is making the leap and making the transition. So during that time, I was able to learn some data analysis skills on the clock and get paid. I mentioned in a post that Friday afternoons, they had an open lab. Friday afternoons, as you might imagine, there's not a lot of students on a university campus. They're usually either gone for the weekend or they're not hanging around asking for advice. So Friday afternoons, I was able to go with a good buddy of mine from college. He also worked at the same college as I did. We were able to get away and go and learn data analysis, learn how to use our new enrollment system to do reporting and really learn that system. And that is what helped me leap into my next opportunity. I wasn't looking for a business analyst role. I wasn't looking for anything in the technology space, but since I had the interest, the desire, and the skills that got developed, I was able to make the leap to that.
Wow. That's a pretty big leap from having that dream of being a professor one day and being part of the university to making a career shift to more like technology-based.
Right.
So how do you develop systems to navigate that, especially when you're doing a whole career change? That's not easy as well.
Right. So knowing my lesson learned before, I still made it a rule. I'm going to, you know, as best as possible, be done by 5 every day and make sure that things weren't overwhelming. One of the things that I found both in my new position and then that carried over was how much I responded to messages and then how much I focused on the things that mattered. So for me, a key has always been making a top 3 priority list, making sure I know what has to be done and what is nice to get done, and making sure I work from that every single day, regardless of messages and regardless of emails. When I took the new position, we took help desk cases, as a lot of technical support or IT does. And those were coming in fast and furious. But, you know, some of the systems that I developed to make sure I stayed on top of that, again, what's priority? What has the person requesting? Have they set a priority? Have they set an urgency? Let's talk expectations. Let's talk about timelines, et cetera. And that's something that's really served me a lot, particularly through that time period. But even today, that's one of the first questions I ask anyone I help or work with, whether it's in my full-time job or helping with coaching, is what is the urgency on this? You know, is this something that requires a due date? Is this something that is that important to you? Is it really urgent? Has it cropped up as urgent? Or is it something that's not so urgent? Not that the non-urgent isn't important. You know, we think of the whole prioritization matrix and making sure that we do that. But I find that a lot of times that question will help people step back and say, wait a minute, this was just on my mind. It wasn't all that important. It was just something that I thought of. And I just wanted to get it out. I just wanted to make sure I had it captured somewhere and say, hey, I get that. I'm that way too. I've got things that I don't want to forget. I don't want to lose sight of. But the system that I try to use is, okay, let's add some context to that. One of the things that I tell, again, people that I work with is, I want to be able, and if I don't do this, call me on it. I want to be able to frame things as, I want X by Y, so that Z. I want something done, you know, whatever that is, fill in the X, by Y, give it a deadline, even if it's somewhat fake, it just gives us somewhere to start from, right? It gives us somewhere to start and set expectations. So that Z. And I also mentioned that the so that might be a little bit artificial as well, at least to start with. But I find if you start with that conversation of what am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to do? The so that becomes really important. So that's what I started doing during that point in my career is, can I frame that up? As you might imagine, not everyone's good at articulating that right out of the gate, but that's what I worked with. And I worked with and still work with some very sharp people that given that frame, they were happy to do it. It was what they were thinking already. They just didn't put it on the page. And rather than me grind and frustrate and, you know, one of the tendencies I have is to internalize a lot of things. So that system really helped me not do that and say, oh, you know, they're dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. Realistically, and say they just didn't fully articulate. They just didn't fully write out what they wanted. And if we can both figure that out, we're both going to be in a good place.
No, and that's why I really like your approach of asking questions like, what is the top urgency? And then actually going beyond that, because anyone's going to say, well, it's urgent now. That's why I'm messaging you. I want it done now. Whether right. It's like a computer update, software update, whether it's just, hey, Wi-Fi's not working. What's going on? Can we get it fixed?
Right.
And so I like how it's like, you know, what are we trying to accomplish? And what time? I mean, I think the best question is that you ask is, what time frame does this need to get accomplished? Because yeah. Then that's going to cause people to kind of sit back and think like, well, it doesn't necessarily need to get done today. I don't want to overwhelm you. I mean, I guess it can get done by, you know, a couple of days from now, but at least definitely
yeah. By the end of the week. So the other thing I'll mention on that point, Zach, is sometimes the big request is what is on their mind. I have examples even just in the last few days where working on something, and it was positioned as, hey, this is a small thing. And then when we dig into it and say, no, this is actually several years of work. so the main question I ask is, well, what is the next thing we can do toward that end? Okay. So if we've got something large, but we don't realize it's large, let's see if we can chunk it in and say, you know, to your point, hey, I got to get this done as soon as possible. Well, as soon as possible might be a year or two, depending on the size of the thing you're asking. So rather than getting overwhelmed by all that needs to be done, let's chunk off the next thing we can do. What is literally the thing you can do by the end of the day? And I find that question powerful, not only for me, for prioritization, but helping other people prioritize what they're doing and working with them is, hey, you can get started on most things. You can get started right away. Action is important. Action is paramount in my mind. You know, if you're not able to take action towards something, you haven't made it clear and you haven't started to define what you want to do with it. So doing action, coming up with the very small thing that you can do is just so important.
Oh, definitely. So how have you translated a lot of those kind of questions to busy dads who are like, you know, worked like you did originally, right? 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then sometimes beyond that, I can't imagine trying to figure out how to schedule in bathroom breaks.
Right. Right. Well,
just to be honest, I've done it because, you know, you have like a busy day and schedule, especially if you're seeing people, especially with your, in your case, students now going to this company. So Have you ever had like a father who's like in your same situation who had to make the choice between career and family? But they had to tell their boss, like, hey, family's gonna come first. I mean, work is always gonna be there.
Yeah. So over time, not something that drastic, but it's usually the question of, how much am I present at home versus how
Okay.
much am I present at work, right? And I agree with you. There are seasons. There are absolutely seasons in work and in career where it requires a little bit of pushing. What I found, in those moments, and I've had them since I've been married. It's not like, oh, everything I do is magically between 8 and 5, and there's no deviation. Like I mentioned, I'm on volunteer boards. I've got evening meetings. I've got commitments that happen. But what the unlock for me and some of the other guys that I've worked with has been, what do you ideally want? It's easy to choose career, but what do you want? What do you want from your marriage? What do you want from being a dad? What do you want? And oftentimes the thought is, well, of course, I want to be there for my kids. I want to be there for my wife. Say, all right, well, knowing that, what do you have to choose to do differently at work? What might you have to give up at work to make sure that's done? And 9 times out of 10, it's I'm too, I'm not bringing clarity to my role. I'm not, I'm not defining things well at work. I'm taking on too many assignments. My boss, who's also one of my great mentors, would say, hey, if you're in a hole, stop digging. It's one of the things that helps me reframe to make sure, wait a minute, I have gotten too many commitments on my plate. So the other thing I'll mention, as far as a system or a way of doing is just making things visible. One of my techniques is I use a board that shows what I'm doing, what I've got queued up next, and then what I'm waiting on. And by day, I'm a project manager, program manager. I do some agile work, et cetera. And one of the techniques from that is just visualizing your work and then limiting it and seeing how many things do I have in the hopper. And I do that religiously, both again, personal, work, volunteer. I do it on all of my things. And one of the reasons I do that is, okay, how many things do I have where I'm waiting on responses? I don't want too many of those out there because when those fish start to bite, when those lines start to move, that means that goes in my active column. I mean, that is something now that I'm going to be working on that's going to compete with my other priorities. So I make sure I keep that limited. And I make sure, of course, the in progress things that I'm doing stay limited. And that, honestly, again, for dads, that's one of the things I talk to them about is how many things do you have going? The other thing is articulating all the areas of responsibility and kind of giving them a job description. And I think this is a post idea that's coming, Zach. This is good. But just really talking about, we have job descriptions for our career, right?
Right.
We don't often give ourselves job descriptions for all the jobs that we hold. So for me, I have a board that I chair. I've got another
Right.
board that I'm a treasurer on. I have given myself a job description, or where one is provided, at least articulated that, to say, here's what I'm responsible to do. Here's what has to be done daily, if appropriate. Here's what has to be done monthly, if appropriate. A lot of those have that cycle. They have some sort of monthly cycle. And then here's some goals annually, almost like target setting at work, right? Here's some things that I want to see done. There's not necessarily anyone asking me to do that, but I found that that gives me the level of clarity. And I think for dads to have the level of clarity of what are my areas of responsibility? What am I asked to do at any given time? And make sure that I'm doing well at those, or at least evaluate to say, maybe I'm not contributing in this area as much as I want to. Maybe this is an opportunity to hand this off to someone else. The other thing I found, again, about myself and then have changed is wanting to grab onto something and then make it mine and then not hand it off. It's a syndrome. It's like, I can take this. I took on this responsibility. Well, the thing I've learned about leadership and the thing I coach again, other people as I work with them is your job as a leader is to be reproducing yourself. As a leader, you're reproducing. And thinking of as a dad, you're doing the same thing, right? In your kids, you're trying to instill the habits and the work and the systems and the things you want them to learn so that as they grow to adulthood, they take on some of that and they learn from your mistakes, but they also learn from your legacy. They learn from what you were able to do and what you were able to impart to them. So to me, that's such a huge part of being a dad. You are, if you're not a leader anywhere else in your life, if you're a dad, you're a leader, right? You're a leader of your family. You're a leader of your spouse, your wife. You are a leader of your kids. Other people are looking up to you and you've got a leadership role. The question is, what are you going to do to make sure that you maintain it?
That's a good question. That's a really solid question of what are you going to do to maintain it? Because I like how your first step is to really kind of figure out what is your role and things. And that's a question I think is very wise to ask, especially when you're trying to set limits like yourself, when you're on so many boards and everything, want to make sure that people are taken care of, things are done well, and then still trying to find time with the family and still trying to find time with instilling those values. Cause that's a full-time job in itself,
right?
Taking care of the family. And, you know, you mentioned on X just like a few days ago how you had like 20 teenage girls over and trying to navigate all that. So
that's a system in itself, right? Thankfully, all I had to do was oversee and not really do any detailed management of that particular party. But now we live a life of connection and we get a lot of opportunity. But I'll do a point there, Zach, as well, is I'm not naturally very outgoing or introverted. I'd like to say with people I work with and say I play a pretty good extrovert on TV, but that lifestyle requires a lot of withdrawal and solitude. And so as far as systems go, this is almost like the anti-productivity hack, but I've got to take the time to be able to make sure I'm in the quiet by myself. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've been doing a lot lately, we were challenged by our small group to practice the Sabbath. And so that's really what we've been trying to carve out is no devices, no technology. Let's connect as a family. Let's play, you know, honest to God board games. Let's sit at the table and draw out the board games and play together and laugh together and enjoy each other, absent from the technology. And I will tell you, particularly in this season of life where I've got a teenager and a preteen, that's so huge. As you're probably aware and working with guys, that is the biggest struggle, right? Our teenagers withdraw to their rooms, they withdraw to their technology, and they just don't, you know, they're not engaged. So we kind of live an interesting life. We do that as a rhythm. We've got a lot of good neighbors and friends that we, where they go outside and play. Yesterday it was unseasonably warm here and it was like, hey, go outside and play. The neighbors are out. We can hear them. You know, it's like old school, the way I grew up. Hey, the neighbor kids are, you know, on the bikes trolling around. But I think for us, it took knowing that we had neighbors that also had that mindset. And rather than assuming it's like, well, no one wants to do this. This is weird. Everyone wants to be on technology. You know, no one's going to push their kids to go outside. We saw the opportunities. We started asking, we started getting to know people and, you know, finding that our lifestyles, our desired lifestyle to have that kind of withdrawal from the crazy and withdrawal from the busy all aligned. So I think that's part of my takeaway there is don't make assumptions, right? Talk to people, get engaged in conversation, find out what your shared values are, and you can really learn a lot from each other, particularly as dads, right? We need community with each other more than we ever are willing to admit.
That's true, especially when you get sidetracked with work, volunteer, you know, family and everything. And that's one of the things that's been really on the rise and also recognized is the need for fathers to have communities, for men to have communities, because you know, they look around and they're not seeing the example that they would want to associate with. Because they've been, you know, a lot of men have been taught like, find people who, have drive, have desire, who don't want to just be on the couch. Right. And so when that's kind of the normative, right, where it's like, unfortunately, we can kind of see that because everyone laughs at all the TV shows.
Yeah.
And that's an example, that's always brought to someone like that, brings to people's attention, is look at what's on the TV. But we don't see things like, Family Matters, Step by Step, Full House, and, those kind of examples as much anymore.
For sure. Yeah. So you mentioned Full House. That's actually one of my daughter's go-to rewatch shows. They've seen this, the entire series several times.
Oh, wow. But
I think it's that comfort and familiarity. They didn't grow up with the show like I did, but there's just a comfort level. Yeah, I think the reason those shows appeal to us, or those mindsets appeal to us, is because we're seeking simpler times. And, no doubt it is a busier time. There's a lot of pressure to be active, engaged on social media, on, being connected and being online all the time. But I think the pushback, again, for busy dads who are feeling like, hey, I don't have time to juggle everything. Part of a good system, or part of understanding what you can do and what you can't do, is auditing your time and looking at that screen time. Man, when I get my iPhone report on Sundays, it can sometimes be a gut punch. Like, wait a minute, I really spend this much time on my phone? You've got to have things in place that tell you, hey, you're really spending a lot of time doing this. Is that really your dream? Is that what you're trying to build? I saw a post online the last few days that said, hey, if you're spending 4 hours on Netflix, that's 4 hours you can be doing to build your dream.
Sure.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love watching TV occasionally and sitting down. I'm usually a doer, so I kind of have to settle into it. I have to make time to enjoy that. So we'll get into some recent pain. I'm a Chiefs fan, for better or worse, even before they were really good, and back when they were really bad. And, I sat down and watched the game, and I didn't feel badly about it because it was part of my plan, right? It was part of the day to say, hey, I'm going to intentionally consume and enjoy an activity that I enjoy doing. So I'm not here to say throw out your Netflix, throw out your TV, you're not grinding enough, stop entertaining yourself. I mean, all of us need ways to unwind and enjoy, but knowing how we can work to further our goals, we can have, we can have meaningful time. We didn't do this yesterday, but occasionally we'll either go to one of the neighbor's houses or we'll watch a game together. And to me, that's stacking a couple things together. It's the opportunity to enjoy time together, and it's the opportunity to enjoy watching football and just doing that and really connecting more than the game, connecting with our neighbors and our friends to make sure those relationships stay healthy.
I like that. I like how you have it so built into those systems where you reduce that kind of feeling of guilt, where it's like, oh man, maybe I should be doing this. I could write a Substack article on this, and just like kind of bring you back to that present moment of, hold on a second, I put this on my schedule and I can enjoy some football.
Yeah. It may be really nerdy, but it is literally on my calendar. I've got a feed, feed of the games, and then I copy it over. It's like, all right, this is, and I tell my kids, hey, this is happening. So they know, like, when we're, we can plan around it together, right? It's like, hey, let's do lunch. Let's do a board game. I'm going to watch the game. You're welcome to stay if you want. If you want to bounce and do something else, that's totally fine. But we just kind of work it out and use the calendar as a guide of the activity we're doing.
Well, I like how you said it's a guy, not an absolute, by the way.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, that way you can learn how to pivot and kind of transition to different things. And that's key. And that's, a lot of this is skills and developing. And sometimes you have to be a little bit nerdy to kind of figure things out. And you have to be intentional with your time. And so the best use is the calendar, Honestly, I can't tell you how many people I know that use a calendar for sharing things. I use it personally between me and my wife. We'll use it. And so that way she knows when I'm working and, you know, beyond the day job.
Right, so. Right. Well, it's, you know, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's all about expectations, right? And mm-hmm. every person, you know, every relationship we have, whether it's that professional relationship or, like you said, with your wife or with your family, it's all about expectations. One of the other questions I, you know, coach people to use is what was expected. You know, whenever they come to me and say, you know, I got a blow up, or, you know, I got a really bad reaction from someone, it's like, what did they expect? And what did you expect? Did you communicate what you expected? Yes or no? And again, this is a hard question for me because I'm kind of an internal processor, a stuffer, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to go and mope and be resentful because, you know, that solves problems, which of course it doesn't. But like, did I communicate what I expected? And did I hear right. what they expected? And did I understand what the expectation was? So that's one of the questions I coach people as well is, what were the expectations on both sides of that relationship? And like you said, a calendar kind of forces, or at least brings clarity to the expectations. It's almost like you're saying with the calendar, it's like, I expect that I'm going to be doing this at this time or during this window. And like you mm-hmm. said, it's a guide. It's negotiable. Yeah. Say, you know what? I was planning to do this catch-up stuff on Monday night, but I really don't need to. Let me see if I can move it to Tuesday morning or move it to Tuesday afternoon because, you know, I wanted to do this other thing on Monday night. It's just knowing that when you make the move, again, going back to that clarity, what goals do I have? What areas of responsibility do I have? And really, what do I want to achieve? And making sure our calendars are in service of that.
You're definitely a question kind of guy.
Yeah, I've learned to ask good questions. I think that's the skill that we can all develop, is making sure that we're always asking the right questions. I have another person that has influenced me a lot that says, hey, I'm not always here to give answers. A lot of times I'm here to make sure the right questions are asked. And I've really taken a lot from that. It's one thing to proffer our wisdom and to offer everything we think we know, but we often come into a scenario assuming that we know things, you know, we know more than we know. We can overhear something that's happened. We can overhear a conversation and jump into it, but we lack a lot of context and we lack a lot of what's happening. So I try to start from square zero and just assume that what I heard might be layered in a bunch of stuff that I don't even know. So I like to come in and, you know, for guys, it's hard to do that. You know, sometimes when you're asking questions, like, oh, well, you're going to sound dumb. But I think of, you know, going back to old school TV shows, I think of Columbo, like he'd show up and he'd sound like the dumbest person in the world. But then mm-hmm. you could tell what he was leading toward was, okay, understanding and getting to what was actually happening. And so sometimes I'll just acknowledge the obvious, right? And say, yeah, this might be a really dumb question, but, and then fill in the blank here. And more often than not because I'm special or amazing, but more often than not, say, wait a minute, we just leapt over some basic assumptions, thinking that everyone was on the same page or everything that was happening here was what it was. And this question brought us back to that. It brought us back to square one. Do we actually all know what we're trying to do here? Do we all know what the expectations are? So over time, I've just found that it's so much easier to go in asking questions than it is to say, you know what, I've read everything. I understand exactly what you need to do, and now you need to do, et cetera. I get, again, as a dad, there are times where you have to step into a scenario and you have to assess what's going on and you have to make a decision. You can't necessarily spend 30 minutes trying to question and diagnose a problem. There are times, right? But more often than not, the question approach gives people breathing room. I think it was Jocko Willink that talked about stepping back from the firing line mm-hmm. and assessing your scenario, is assessing your situation. That advice has been big for me to say, wait a minute, let's all take a breath. We're not doing anything that is, you know, we're not doing anything that requires immediate action. We need to step back and think about what we're doing and make sure we understand the scenario. One of the common things, again, all over, I'll hear from people and say, oh, you know, we're really firefighting here. My dad was a career firefighter, so I can tell you a little bit about that world. Not a lot, but a little bit about that world. And I will tell you, even before they rushed into a burning building, they did some basic scenario analysis and planning. So if emergency personnel who literally have to go make split-second decisions and go save people versus, you know, your white-collar job where, you know, you're just trying to make sure you meet the next quarterly targets, et cetera, you've got time, right? You've got time to step back and ask the questions and do some scenario analysis and not just jump in and start deciding and saying, this is happening, this is what's happening. No, you got time to step back and make sure that you know what's happening. That, again, if you're leading a team, whether that's your family or your work team, they have mm-hmm. context of the scenario. Everyone's got understanding and expectations about how they're going to help, how they're going to contribute as a team. And then and only then should you jump into execution and making sure that you're getting things done.
Yeah, no, I like that because sometimes we rush in and then we get burned.
Yeah. Oh, it's happened to me way too often. That's part of the experience.
Well, that's where the learning happens, is when we recognize how much we really just have to take a step back or ask a question or just slow down because we just want to respond. And sometimes when we respond, we're really just reacting to the situation. We're not really being thoughtful, yes. Not being mindful, we're not being aware.
Absolutely.
We're walking into a conversation halfway through without knowing the context, like you said, and all of a sudden you're jumping in, people are looking at you like, hold on a second, that's not what he said. You just missed like this.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And that's where probably one of the wisest thing I said is like, you can have emotion, right? Because we all have emotions. It's not being consumed by the emotion where, you know, you're like consumed whether by anger or frustration, sadness, or then it becomes like almost like a wasteful of energy in a way.
Right. Yeah. That emotion that, you know, I've heard emotion described as energy in motion, right? And right. Emotion can drive us to do really great things. There are times where, you know, getting angry at an injustice or a problem in the world drives a lot of very great things, you know. So sometimes the emotion surfaces and there's channeling and directing toward, all right, what are we really trying to solve? Or what is the pain we're feeling? You know, for me, I had, you know, going back to that that big shift in my life, I had a lot of emotions being angry at, you know, injustice and et cetera. And really for me, the unlock was, okay, I can use this energy to obsess and be anxious and worried. Or I can use this energy to develop myself, to grow, to see what's next and see what that next opportunity is. The other thing, you know, I give as encouragement to dads is just because the season appears to be ending doesn't mean that you won't have opportunities to do the same thing later. I've still got opportunities to teach, to mentor young people, to encourage them, and to work with internationals that I thought were exclusive to my university role, but really have not been exclusive to my university role. Am I not, you know, do I have an office on campus? No, I sure don't. But do mm-hmm. I have the opportunity to meet with students around campus? Do I have opportunity to have students in our home? Yeah, I do. We have a lot of those opportunities. So a season may feel like it's over and you may feel like, you know, I really failed at that. I'll never get to be able to do that part of my life again, or I'll never have an opportunity like that again. You know, don't count yourself out. You have more opportunity to think, and God opens a lot of doors in different ways. Or, you know, you hear the saying, closes a door, opens a window. For me, it might be, it's like he made a tunnel over here. There's just, you know, keeping our eyes open and just holding things with a loose hand and saying, you know, it's not really ours to define when a season is on and when it's off. It's just knowing when to pivot and when to make the jump when we need to.
No, really wise. And so as we kind of wrap up today, what's like a word statement or phrase you like to give to someone who's like who was like in your shoes before? So well, how would you like to inspire someone today?
Sure. If you're in the scenario where you're facing a big transition and things are dicey, you're not sure what to do next, that advice of define what's important, define what your areas are is super critical. It's tempting to try to plow your way through it. I did. I tried to just numb the pain and work through it. It's tempting to be anxious about the scenario you're in and worry about what's next. I tried that too. It didn't work. What worked for me was, all right, who do I want to be as at that time as a husband? What do I want my legacy to look like? Not just my career, but what do I want to show up to work doing? What do I want to be known for? I mentioned my dad was a firefighter. He worked hard, as a lot of firefighters do, had a second job. He worked a lot. But the one thing I definitely took away from that experience with him is he wanted to make sure that we were provided for well, and that also that he valued the work for itself. So no matter what you're doing, what you're asked to do, knowing that you can give it your best and show up your best, but clarify expectations. Again, it goes back to that clarifying expectations and not making assumptions. Don't assume that it is a season of life where you have to work extra to try to make an impression. Maybe that season of life is to set some really hard guardrails and say, all right, because this situation is stressful, I am only going to deal with it between 8 and 5, literally 8 and 5. I have these other things in my life, these other areas, these other intentional places where I volunteer or I learn or I contribute to my family. Those are actually my focus. Yes, I spend 40 hours a week at work, but those are my focus. So that's the advice I'd give to someone going through a season like that. Seasons are temporary. You can endure them. We're made to survive a lot of things, but just understanding who am I, what are the areas of responsibility I have, and how do I want to show up in those areas is, I think, the most critical thing.
Well said. So, as a call of action, take time to look at your systems. So, in this moment, put in the comments below that you're going to take some time to evaluate your systems and make sure you go follow Christopher over here. He's a good guy. We recently connected, and I'm so glad he came on the podcast. I learned a lot, how to be more active, looking at systems and things like that. So I'll be excited to even apply it to my own life about how I can improve and look forward to. And I know Chris is doing it on a daily basis. And if you're a busy dad and you need help with that, Chris is the man to help you with a plan. And if you need some help, we have the Men's Lifeline Academy Discord group, which meets Mondays at 7:30 p.m. EST now. We had a little bit of a change in the time because members wanted to be there on time and we had to adjust, pivot. And so you always have to look at your systems of how to do that. And so if you have value out of this video, make sure you subscribe, like, comment, post, share, and all the socials. So that way we can keep promoting videos to help men out there who need some guidance, need some help, need some community. So I hope everyone has a blessed day. Christopher, thank you again for coming on the podcast, my friend.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Great conversation. And I'm learning a lot from you and your community.